And to that piece of lieutenant that's always on his podcast, bashing us,
All right, everybody. Eric Dim, your most complained cop, NYPD. This is New York's finest retired and filtered podcast. Your 265 Police Live Series. Of course, me, it's the founder and co-host of the podcast, John McCary, retired lieutenant. We got a new episode, Women Being Assaulted in New York City. What do you got?
Yeah, let's get right into it. We're going to lay out the case of why New York City women are being assaulted randomly in the streets as they walk down the block. A bunch of viral TikTok videos went out. A couple of TikTokers were being assaulted as they walked down New York City streets, right? I think the perpetrator was ultimately apprehended. There was also another case of a 56-year-old Hispanic woman literally walking down the block coming home from work, and a male just completely cold clocks her, punches her in the face. She's completely defenseless. He fractured her jaw, fractured some teeth, and it comes out that he was ultimately released, charged with a misdemeanor, and released.
So this is important that we talk about this case, because what do we hear from the New York City Police Department? Perception versus reality. So it's important that the reality of this case is that women are being attacked randomly and unprovoked. So ultimately, what does that mean? To me, you have a pattern here. You have a pattern of hate crime. And the similarities are white females that are being randomly attacked just for their gender or for their race or for both. And that in order to have a proper representation of crime, these crimes need to be categorized properly. And I think what you have here is felony assaults, an alarming rate, and I think ultimately it's a hate crime.
So, woman walking down the block, randomly punched in the face, fractured jaw, so she has a broken jaw, serious physical injury. The niece says that she was released, that the perpetrator was released because they couldn't prove intent. Now, I don't know if she was talking about the New York City Police Department, and I don't know if she was talking about the DA's office, but I think whoever said it, that statement is highly wrong. But what's even more scary, Eric, is the fact that even if this was charged properly, when it got down to the DA's office at the DA level, if it was charged properly, felony assault, he still would be released because it's a bail eligible offense.
Yeah. I mean, that's just another reason for any New Yorker right now to say, you know what? My vote counts. And actually, it's important who you vote for at your local municipality, your local politicians, because ultimately affects your public safety, because the legislation that's been acted has created bail reform. And this bail reform lets animal savages, just like this person of interest, this subject right here, this perpetrator, is destroying lives. I mean, to actually have the ability to actually unprovoked strike a woman to the face, knowing that you're going to cause a substantial amount of injury, is just pure evil. So we hear about all mental health crisis and all these other all the programs, social programs that are needed for rehabilitation. I'm sorry. Some people are just downright evil, and they will take opportunity of a lawless city. If you allow the city to operate lawlessness and put criminals first over victims, then this is what you get. This is the ultimate outcome. This is the byproduct of having the legislation that we see now that we're living in New York City. This is just terrible. It's horrific. It's an abomination. Again, I say this is a complete hate crime. If they can't prove intent, the intent is something based on gender or based on race.
I mean, I think the crime itself speaks to the intent. The crime itself, you punch a defenseless woman in the face. The intent there is to cause serious physical injury to her. The crime itself is the intent. You know, it was completely unprovoked. They had no interaction prior. You fracture the woman's jaw. She's 56 years old. She's defenseless. The intent is there. So whoever made that statement is completely off base. And I'm going to go one further. The charges matter. I put a tweet out. I got beat up a lot about it by a lot of cops. And I really don't care because I'm not backing off of what I said. What I said was, the perpetrator should have been charged with a felony. Why wasn't he at DA Alvin Bragg? The police department should have charged him with a felony. Eric, am I off base for saying that?
That's why I'm laughing. Absolutely not. Of course you're not off base. I mean, any common sense person would think that this is a felony assault. But what do you need for a felony assault? Serious physical injury. This woman sustained broken and fractured teeth. I would say that's a serious physical injury. So if this cannot be proven in court to be a felony crime, now we have a huge problem, not just on our New York City Police Department, but ultimately our entire justice system. We talk about it all the time. There's a complete dichotomy from the actual arrest to prosecution, and we're seeing a failure on both parts. This needs to be charged appropriately, needs to be the highest charges possible that could be allotted with this particular crime. And then evidence-based wise, the DA's office has to do everything in their power to put this person in jail behind bars. This person is obviously a reoffender and is going to reoffend. This person needs to be off the streets immediately.
One of the critiques that I got from it too, an individual said the charges don't matter because they're going to get dealt out anyway. Eric, what do you have to say to that person that the charges don't matter, that it doesn't matter what the police department charges and it doesn't matter what the DA ultimately charges?
Yeah, who is this person? I would like to meet this person. It's complete idiotic moron. Of course the charges matter. The charges are so important because initially from the onset, it's so important that the police officers that make the arrest put together a great package of all the evidence that has come to the case on a preliminary investigation-wise, all the facts of the case, especially injuries. And then that's where the dichotomy, I tell you, from all the information possible, the highest charges possible, then you can present it to the DA's office. And that's where the dichotomy comes in. The arrest is all the allegations. And obviously the DA's office has to go evidence-based-wise and be able to put this case in front of a jury of peers or in front of a judge and be able to prosecute. And obviously there's video surveillance captured. We have a sustained injury. We have an unprovoked attack. We have an age of the victim. We see everything here that's capable of prosecuting this as a felony crime. Absolutely. I don't even see how someone could say that the charges don't even matter.
And ultimately, I believe what we just spoke about is the reason why women are being assaulted on New York City streets. Because what you're seeing is it being allowed. When people aren't charged for the crime they commit properly, if it starts at the police department level, let's say the police department didn't charge him with a felony initially. Now they're presenting a misdemeanor to the DA, who has a 99.9% conviction rate. So what's the DA do? Why do they have a 99.9% conviction rate? Because they take nothing to trial. They plead every criminal out. So what's he going to ultimately plead out to? A violation of the law. So now this individual who shouldn't be walking around should have initially been arrested for a felony and then ultimately charged with a felony by the DA and have to suffer the consequences of having a felonious charge is walking out the door because he pled out to a violation because he wasn't charged properly. Politics affect everything.
Yeah, again, you know, I think this is a great opportunity to talk about Mayor Eric Adams. Mayor Eric Adams has been on this campaign pushing with the New York City Police Department, perception versus reality. And the reality is New York City streets are not safe. New York City streets are not safe because of progressive politics. They're not safe because we have a weak leadership in the New York City Police Department. We have a failed justice system. But we also have a mayor that does not have an actual stance on crime. We don't know what he's for or against. Let's talk about the debate that he just had with a defense attorney who's a complete leftist progressive. I don't agree with her ideologies. However, she did put Eric Adams on the spot, and she did point out that he does not have a stance, and we don't know actually where his position is on crime.
So so Eric Adams goes on The Breakfast Club, Hot 97. I'll put the links to that in the bio of this story, of this podcast. So wherever you watch or listen, the link for that interview will be there. I suggest you watch it. So Oluyemi Olorun is a special guest on The Breakfast Club. She's there with, I believe his name's Ebro. I'm not 100% sure. But she instantly goes on attack mode on Eric Adams. I think it was very unprofessional. It looked like a complete setup to go after him. But he's not able to properly defend anything. He looks like, and the reason I say he's not able to properly defend anything is because we never know where Eric Adams stands on anything. So she actually, I think the most horrible thing that she said was, she said a police officer was killed. What about the seven people? What about the seven people that the police killed? You know, basically writing off the death of police officer, the murder of Jonathan Diller.
First of all, you can't even make the comparison. The death of a New York City police officer, the murder of a New York City police officer, is tearing the fabric of the entire city, entire state, the entire country, the entire world. Every time we lose a police officer, we're losing a fabric of our society. The New York City police officer is a foundation, a baseline, a representation of a good society, of a well-performing society. So to make a comparison is insane. And first of all, the New York City Police Department is the most restrained police department in the entire country. I was a special operations lieutenant for 8 years, anti-crime sergeant for 6 years. I was an active cop for 5 years. And you were extremely busy in your career. And both of us have never used our firearms, and we never pulled the trigger. And we were in countless various arrests, especially involving illegal firearms, and we never pulled the trigger. So if you get killed by the New York City Police Department, you definitely put yourself in a position where the New York City Police Department had absolutely no other resort than to take lethal action.
So now Oliemi goes out on social media, and she puts the clips that actually make Eric Adams look stupid. I do believe that she did make him look stupid on a lot of different issues, especially when it came to stop, question, and frisk. He tried to play, oh, I'm Mr. Progressive, and Mrs. Progressive came over and smacked him around, and then he tried, he just basically tried to stay as a progressive and stay aligned with her when she basically, he had no argument for her when she said that stop, question, and frisk are up under your administration. You're saying that you were against these things. You're saying that you were against bias-based policing, but yet stop, question, and frisk are up under your administration, and 97% of the people being stopped are Black and Hispanic. And Eric Adams had no answer for her, which is disgraceful. It's absolutely disgraceful. He went to continue to play that, no, I'm the progressive, and I'm against bad stops, and I'm against all these things, and never actually gives her the fact that, guess what? 93% of all the murderers in New York City, the people who commit murder, are Black and brown.
This would have been a great opportunity to prove the fact that the New York City Police Department is not racist, because the police department doesn't target adversaries and persons of interest and subjects for stops and frisks based on race, based on creed. It's based on crime. And the bottom line is, and people don't want to hear the reality, most of the murders are in Black and brown communities. You just gave the facts, 93%. So, of course, the police department is on par with exactly what's happening. The police department targets crime. Where the crime's happening, that's where the police department's going to be an influx of, and they're going to do intrusive police work. So, yes, is Mayor Eric Adams going against what he initially said as captain Eric Adams? Absolutely. But he should say that. He should say, as the captain, it would be nothing wrong to say, you know what, as a captain at the time, I saw it as biased policing, but now as the mayor, as I've evolved, I see that intrusive police work and the ideology to broken windows is actually what will fix a lawless society. That's the only way to bring society back to norm, is by intrusive police work. It's intrusive police work that keeps these persons of interest from becoming creatures of life and attacking society. But Mayor Eric Adams, we don't know who he is. Sometimes he's for and sometimes he's against. We don't know who he is. We don't know what his stance is.
Again, he continues to bash Mayor Rudolph Giuliani, who, in my opinion, was one of the best mayors New York City ever had, if not the best mayor that New York City ever had. So he continues to bash him, yet he adopted his crime strategy, which is broken windows policing, utilizing stop, question, and frisk. Now, it's funny that he did that because he never partook in doing those things himself. He likes to use those things better when other people are doing them. But he doesn't even defend that he does that. He pretends to be this progressive. He pretends the New York City Police Department is still this systemically racist organization, even though it's predominantly Black and brown at this point. It's the majority Black and brown department. But he still continues to pretend it. So the fact that he didn't have an answer for that just shows the fact that Eric Adams is always, like I said, He's for and he's against everything.
Yeah, and he actually, well, he debunks himself and further proves that the New York City Police Department is not racist because Mayor de Blasio initiated change in the face of the police department. Then Eric Adams ran with it, just completely changed the entire outlook of the police department. It, you know, it went from a diverse police department. In my opinion, the police department was diverse before Mayor Bill de Blasio. But now with Eric Adams, it's not diverse anymore. It's predominantly black and brown, and it's actually not diverse. It's actually completely one-sided. We see a shortage of Asian officers. We see definitely a shortage of white officers compared to what we had before. So it's not diverse anymore. But with a majority-minority police department, I think it's 54, 56% of black and brown right now, that most of the stops are 97% black and brown. Why? Because it shows the police department is targeting crime. It's not bias-based, and it's not based on racial profiling. It's based on the needs to address the crime conditions and the crime trends that are going on in the city itself.
With the NYPD in China, guess what their stops are going to be against? 99.9% Chinese people. That's what the demographic's going to be. You put in a 99% black and brown neighborhood, guess what the stops are going to be from the New York City Police Department? 99.9% stops are going to come from that. It's majority. It's not showing anything. The police department targets crime. Now, the police department has a lot of faults, and we point that out here. And we're going to point out a fault right here of a token pale-faced chief of patrol, John Schell. Now, in response to defend his boss, he comes after Olami O'Loren, who says her tweet is, Eric Adams not only revived the police unions that were disbanded in 2020 for the disproportionate abuse against black and brown New Yorkers, he revived stop, question, and frisk. Since he became mayor, 97% of all stops and searches have been on black and Latino New Yorkers. Now, this is, again, easy. If you want to put a fact out there of why they're not racist, do it, right? I still don't think it should come from all these people in the New York City Police Department. It should be one voice for the New York City Police Department, but that's not what it is. So Token Pale Face puts this out. This movement lawyer epitomizes everything that true New Yorkers are against. So the police department speaks for who's a true New Yorker and who's not. Do you think for a moment that community boards and block associations agree with what this misinformed person stands for? Question mark. Anyway, I will get back to you in a couple of days after the funeral tomorrow for police officer Jonathan Diller, the very person you dismissed today. Rest assured, though, if you need help this weekend, we will lay down our lives to protect you. Talk soon. Eric, what do you think about that?
Well, again, this goes back to what I've been saying. You've been saying the same thing. These guys need to stay off social media. The police commissioner should be the only one on social media. He should be the mouthpiece for the police department. It should be one person, and that's it, the person that's in charge, so that there's a clear message of what the vision is of the police department, and that we retain professionalism. But unfortunately, we have a police commissioner that's completely insignificant and just missing in action. But again, I think that John Schell and Kaz Daughtry and Mike Hamper and the weak upper management of the New York City Police Department, they need to stay off social media. It needs to be one person. It needs to maintain professionalism. It needs to be apolitical. This politicizing these debates, it has to stop. You need to be a representative of the New York City Police Department and not a representative of John Schell.
John Schell also responds to her. So now she blocks him after he retweets that, right? And he retweets the block. He actually doesn't retweet it. He takes a picture that he was blocked. This is from an official department account, by the way. Just what I thought. Meet me in Massapequa tomorrow at 10 a.m. to say goodbye to 31-year-old husband, father, son, and brother, a young man who is trying to protect New York City and uphold the oath he swore to, a man who fought to save his partners, the community, and whatever else he says. But he goes on to ramble. Now, again, it's my contention that they see how effective advocating online is because of myself, Eric Dim, and Sal Greco, and they're actually trying to emulate us. But what it is we're individuals. We're not speaking for the New York City Police Department. And by the way, I think our tweets are much more professional than this is. I think way more professional than these are. So again, John, we're going to offer you the services. We do social media consulting. This looks absolutely horrible. Absolutely horrible.
Well, that actually solidifies what we've been saying about professionalism. So John Schell, that's what I mean. John Schell is acting on behalf of John Schell, and he's not realizing that he's a representative of the New York City Police Department, and that when you're putting something on social media, it has to be representative of the actual department and not John Schell and your ego and your feelings. And I think you're right. I think absolutely you nailed it. You hit the nail on the head that they see us and themselves, and well, if they can get a message out there in this sense, they're definitely trying to mirror what we do, and they're trying to copy. And they see the reach that we've gotten. And I don't say followers. We don't have that many followers in comparison. They do. They have a lot more followers. But what we do have is we have reach and we have support, because what we're saying is making sense. It's actually supportive of the rank and file. And we have professional conversations. I say it all the time. Opposition meets opportunity. We have conversations with opposition. We have conversations with people that support us, and they're professional. And what we see from them is completely the opposite, just completely unprofessional. It's immature. It definitely is not representative of a leader, someone that we expect from the chief of patrol or someone from the upper echelon of the New York City Police Department. Just completely embarrassing. And I think that they're taunting this person. I think that she's wrong. I don't like her ideologies, but she has a right to speak her mind just as we do.
I don't agree with her at all. I just think that the New York City Police Department should be more professional. And if they want to debunk her with stats on why that is, and debunk the fact that the police department's not racist. You know, her comment about the murder of Jonathan Diller is absolutely disgusting, but it's no less disgusting than the New York City Police Department attacking people on social media using their official accounts to try to bring down the weight of the police department. She's absolutely off base. She's absolutely wrong. I agree with a lot of what he says there. But I would never go this way. I would go this way as an individual, but as an organization, you police everybody. You stand up for everybody, just like you said. So stand up for them. Completely, completely unprofessional. And Eric, you're right. We do have a big reach, but we don't have a lot of followers. We don't. But there is a new account that popped up recently, Deputy Commissioner of Operations. It was first Assistant Commissioner Daughtry. It was at NYPD Daughtry. There's a lot of people saying that he bought followers. From what my research shows, he did.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Listen, I agree with what John Schell is saying in a sense. John Schiller, we're paying respects, and the police officers, even with that, they're still going to be out there putting their lives on line. Is he right about that? Yeah. Everything he's saying there is right, but it's his delivery. His delivery is coming off completely immature, it's unprofessional, and his delivery needs to be much different when you're a representative of the New York City Police Department. His delivery appears to come from John Schell, and it sounds very emotional. And exactly that, I agree with you. He should just put the facts out there, you know, and for her to compare the death of a New York City police officer to the murder, to the death of adversaries by the New York City Police Department, that's a complete dichotomy. That would have been a great opportunity for him to compare the stats and show how many actual police-involved shootings there are in a year in comparison to how many arrests they made. That would show how much restraint the New York City Police Department does. But these guys do a terrible job of PR. They have no idea how to be on social media. You said it before. If they need consulting, New York's Finest Retired and Filter Podcast will help you out. Come our way.
So, and then it gets even crazier. Tiffany Caban, far left socialist. I mean, I go after her probably three times a week. So does Eric. We repost what she says. Her page is almost like a parody page. It's ridiculous. She's so off base. It's not even funny. So I think she retweets something that Eric Adams says, and she says Pew, PHEEEWWWW, Pew, like few, whatever. So here we go. Token pale face. His boss, Kaz, told him, hey, tweet this for me because I don't want to do it because Adrian Adams just ripped us a new one in city council. So you do it. So he gives him this tweet. In my opinion, I don't know that happened, but this is what I think happened. Pew, John Schell tweets, under this mayor's leadership, we have saved over 700 people from being shot in this city. Pew, he says again. Under this mayor, thousands of gun arrests protecting our most vulnerable communities. Pew, under this mayor, crime is down while fighting ridiculous policies that your friends put in place and he inherited. Policies hurting everyday New Yorkers in our cities. TikTok. You know, as I travel through the city and spend time doing media just about every day, the community always asks me, what can we do to help? And I always say to New Yorkers, if you want change, vote the change you seek. Be well.
Well, first of all, you know what? The virtue signaling that I see in that tweet is just absolutely ridiculous, because every one of these chiefs, the upper echelon of police department, we've all heard them speak prior to Mayor Eric Adams becoming the mayor of New York City. They had nothing positive to say about Mayor Eric Adams, but now that he's the mayor and he's their boss, man, they have a complete different tune. And I'm sure what they're saying at work. And that's why I say my hat's off them sometimes, is I don't know how they do it. They go to work and they put on this complete facade and they pretend to be someone else. They pretend to believe something else. And then they go home and there's someone completely different. So I don't know how they do it. I really don't. It's absolutely ridiculous. What a joke.
I got dumber reading these tweets. And honestly, I've heard John Schell speak a lot. I don't think these are his words. I don't. I think this is coming directly from Kaz Daughtry. I mean, if I had to put money on it, that's what I would say. Kaz Daughtry told him to tweet this. I definitely got dumber reading this. I mean, the fact, first of all, crime's not down. He's right about the legislation. He's completely right about the legislation, but he leaves out the fact that New York City Mayor Eric Adams supported all of it. Every piece of legislation that's been put in, he supported everything. He helped draft them, all of it, every single thing. And now that he's in charge of it, he blames the law that he supported not only a year ago. He blames the protest settlement agreement that he agreed to the week prior. I mean, the guy is for and against everything. And John Schell here highlights the failure in public safety by talking about the thousands of gun arrests on New York City streets that they've made. People did not carry guns under the Giuliani and the Bloomberg administration. This is a failure in public safety. The thousands of gun arrests are dwarfed by the amount of people that are carrying illegal firearms on New York City streets. And these guns aren't being happened by great police work. They're falling out of people's pockets. They're everywhere. I mean, it's a disgrace. The whole tweet could be debunked, and it's disgusting.
Hands down, the increased arrest of and retrieval of illegal firearms on the streets of New York City is not a celebration. It's not a victory. It's actually quite concerning and alarming. It shows how bad the streets are, because for every gun that we actually retrieve, how many guns do we not get? There's thousands of guns that are out there that we're not getting. Every gun that's actually apprehended is a needle in the haystack. And I will say this. At the time when I was working under Bloomberg, which really is an extension of the Giuliani era, it was broken windows, it was intrusive police work. To get a firearm, you had to put a lot of surveillance work in. You had to do a lot of work. You had to have those great, you had to have a great eye for behavioral indicators mimicking someone was in possession of a firearm. But every time you actually apprehended someone with a firearm, it was a violent perpetrator. It was someone that had intent to use that firearm. But what do we get now? It's what I saw at the end of my tenure of my career. Is you start to see firearms that were retrieved by people that were actually carrying them because they were scared, not necessarily perpetrators. So this is not a good sign and a good reflection of what New York City is, and it's not a sign of safety.
Yeah, and this is complete unprofessionalism, honestly. And at the last city council hearing, the New York City speaker, who, again, I'm not a fan of, she was like, who's monitoring these tweets? Like, who's approving these tweets? Who's fact-checking these tweets? And obviously, nobody's fact-checking John Schell's tweets or approving these tweets. He's putting them out. So, I mean, his boss, Kaz, is sending them to him, and he's putting it out. But, I mean, this it really is a slap in the face. And then Caban went after him and said that because he had tweeted a judge's name saying that a judge let a perpetrator out and it was the judge's fault if everyone does their job. It was the name of the tweets. He put out the wrong judge's name, which he basically doxed the wrong person and said the wrong thing about someone. So he puts out the wrong judge's name. He feels like an idiot. He backpedals. Caban says he should be brought up on perjury, on misleading statements, that he lied. That was completely off base because it's not during an official hearing. He wasn't sworn in. He was just tweeting from an official account. But I will say, this is a CCRB. If a New York City cop did this, they'd get CCRB'd CCRB, John Shell.
Well, absolutely. I 100% agree with you. And I think it was absolutely ridiculous for her to make that statement. But what does it show? It solidifies everything we've said on this podcast. We are the only entity that's ever deciphered the disciplinary matrix. We're the only entity that's actually explained how detrimental this could be to a cop's career, because it is the tool that's been weaponized by CCRB. And here you see it from New York City Council. They hold the disciplinary matrix with an extreme amount of weight, and they believe that this is the doctrine to terminate police officers. And now it's obvious that John Shell never took any pride in the disciplinary matrix, didn't care about it. But now that it was thrown in his face, I hope that at this point that he actually takes some pride to look into it. And unlike before, where supposedly it was supposed to be examined, that now we have to take an opportunity to examine it and to revamp this ridiculous doctrine that can actually terminate police officers for doing their job. What do you think?
I think that he violated numerous violations in the Department of Social Media guide. I think that he was discourteous. I think he was disrespectful. I think that this is a CCRB. I think this is a CCRB and an IAB complaint against Chief John Shell and anyone else, and Kaz Daughtry. I think that if a New York City police officer did that, he'd be the first to hammer you. So why is he exempt from that? Why is he exempt from that? This is not courtesy, professionalism, and respect. This is, you're coming from an organizational standpoint, and you're acting like a child when if your guys acted the same way you did, you would hammer them. So you know what? So Tiffany Caban was wrong, but I think she does need to file an IAB complaint, and she does need to file a CCRB. And I think Solarian does too, because the system that you claim, that's fine, and cops need to do their job anyway, and nobody should worry about this anyway. You should also be held to the same standards then. That's how I feel.
Well, absolutely. But what else does it solidify? It solidifies the problem with the disciplinary matrix that we've been saying. So if you're Eric Dimmy, John McCary, Sal Greco, you are held to a standard of the aggravating factors from the disciplinary matrix. That's what Tiffany Caban is talking about here. She's actually talking about the presumptive penalty, which is the automatic, and the aggravating factors, which would, if this was actually an investigation and he was recorded and he gave misleading statements, he would be held to termination. But what does John Shell and other members of the police department that are in line with him, what do they get held to? What standard? Nepotism. They get what's called the mitigating factors, which is a low level penalty because of the circle that they're in. So again, it just solidifies everything that we've said about the disciplinary matrix and how it's completely problematic. But I agree, this should be a CCRB. This should be extremely examined. It just shows also, how the misuse of social media, how we're seeing it by the police department. We've never seen this before. I mean, I don't want to, unfortunately we lost Jonathan Diller, who's a member of CRT, but we had issues with other CRT members from different boroughs on social media. And it just shows we never seen the New York City Police Department act in such a manner on social media. It's getting out of control. And the city council asked if it's being vetted, but obviously not, because the New York City Police Department is using social media all over the place. It's not being monitored. It's just coming out extremely unprofessional.
Well, I do, now she's making the claim. The NYPD is harassing me. They're harassing me, a professional attorney, a media professional attorney, simply because I outperformed the mayor in an interview. It sounds pretty similar to what happened to us. Now, I don't think that a mobster is going to threaten her. I don't think that the police commissioner's brother's business partner, who's a mobster, is going to come and threaten her. And I don't think that members of the CRT, the lieutenants and the captain, are going to come identify themselves on the social media and try to get her to get offline. I don't think those things will happen. But she's right. It's completely unprofessional, and it shows a pattern, right? Same pattern that myself and Eric have shown time and time again on our social media and on this podcast. So now, I don't agree with Solarian at all. And if I was sitting in that interview with her, or Eric was sitting in that interview with her, I would have been completely professional. And I've debunked every single thing that she asked the mayor. And obviously, he's not taking too much of a attention to New York City or the New York City Police Department, because that was an easy interview. And the things she brought up could have easily been debunked, and he could have did it in a professional, polite way and just moved on. And she really wouldn't have had any clips other than her asking the question.
Yeah, I agree. Listen, this would have been an opportunity. I always say opposition meets opportunity. This was an opportunity for him to shut down his opposition, and communications breaks barriers. He could have easily debunked all her statements. These questions were layups. It would be very easy for him to explain the correlation of the crime stats and the stop, question, frisk, and the high amount of stops that they have right now in correlation to black and brown people. That would have been an easy one for him, but he couldn't answer the question. So the fact that he answered the question, it leads me to believe there's two things you could ask yourself, or it could be both. One, he's just a complete moron who's totally inadequate and totally inept, right? Or he doesn't want to answer properly because then it shows that he's actually not a moderate, is that he is a complete progressive, but at the same time, he's lying and he doesn't have an actual stance and he just placates whoever's in his party at that moment. Or it's a combination of both.
He just sings to whoever he's in front of, right? He's in a hot 97. He's surrounded by black people and he's going to go towards that progressive stance because that's what they have on that show, that anti-police progressive stance. And that's who he pretends he is. But she debunks, like, wait, you're not a progressive. You're Rudy Giuliani style. You're doing stop, question, and frisk. You're doing broken windows theory. But yet he continues to say, no. I'm like you. I'm a progressive like you. Like, he continues in that fashion. He can't properly answer the question because, again, like I said, he's for everything. He's against everything, depending on who he's in front of. Put him in a room with a bunch of white conservatives, and he's going to talk about how ridiculous all the laws that he supported, that he helped generate, that he helped put together, every agreement that he signed off on, how they're all terrible. Meanwhile, he was directly involved in all of them. And then he's going to go back on Hot 97 and say how they're great, and this is what he's done to stop the racist NYPD. It makes every time this guy talks, it's like he has a candle and both ends are burning. Whoever he's in front of, that's who he is that day. He's a shapeshifter. He's nobody, Eric Adams. I don't know who he is.
Exactly that. No, like John said, no one knows what his actual stance is, right? And this was a great opportunity for him to actually start to get more support from New York City, because right now he's on the outs with progressives, he's on the outs with moderates, he's on the outs with right wing, because no one knows what his actual stance is. And I think he would get more respect from his opposition if he actually said, listen, here was my stance, and here why was my stance at that time, and here is my stance now, and this is the position I am, why. He could easily say, listen, life evolves. At a time, he thought that stop, question, frisk was bias-based policing based on his perception and the way the city was at that time, and he can make the comparison now. But he's not doing that. He's doing a terrible job. He doesn't have an actual stance. And that's really, I think that's what the downfall of, and I think that's why he doesn't get support from people that are in opposition to his political opinions and people that are actually aligned with him for the most part. And I say aligned because we really don't know what he's aligned with. Again, I think a shapeshift, that's pretty funny that you say that. Because nobody knows what he is. I mean, he's a total chameleon. He virtual signals to everyone whoever is in his corner and whoever he has an opportunity to align himself with at that time. You know, honestly, again, the only thing that he is good at is putting on suits and going to parties. That's it.
And his appointed management are the same thing. The shapeshift is too. John Schell, I don't know what he is. I don't know if he's a progressive. I don't know if he's a hardcore police officer. I don't know if he's got a soft heart and he doesn't believe in policing. I don't know anything about any of these people because they all emulate whatever Eric Adams does. I mean, it's disgusting. So that's why I have no respect for the appointed management in the NYPD. Sam Antar, I don't know if you guys know him. We're going to have him on the show soon. He's the CFO for Crazy Eddie's, if any of you ever remember that. He was arrested for frauding, for committing fraud. But he winded up working with the federal government, and he's a statistics guy. He's an analysis guy. He was an auditor. He was an accountant. And he helped the FBI catch people like him, you know, and that's where he dedicated the rest of his life to. So he just put this tweet out. Very interesting. Memo to Oleomi O'Loren. In New York City, Black and Latinos individuals bear the brunt of gun violence. They account for 94.7% of shooting victims and 95.6% of homicide arrests. Surprisingly, when it comes to police stop and frisks, these same communities represent only 89.6%. Yet, consider this. Black and Latino residents constitute just 52% of New York City's population. While racism undoubtedly persists, it plays a negligible role in stop and frisk.
I mean, hands down, look, he's mirroring everything that we're saying. The police department targets crime. The police doesn't target race. And even with that, there's always going to be a margin level of error, right? But wouldn't you rather have a small percentage margin level of error with the stops that are conducted than a lawless society that we're living in now, that we see right now, that the subways are just completely deteriorated, that women are getting punched for absolutely no reason, unprovoked incidents? This is the society when you remove stop, question, frisk. It's unfortunate that the black and brown community has been plagued with this culture of crime, but we have to address it properly so that we keep crime under control. I mean, are there social programs that could be put into these communities to help with that? I'm sure there are. But as far as policing goes, for the law enforcement profession, they're doing exactly what they're supposed to do, and that's make arrests appropriately according to what the crime is. And listen, if the public, if these politicians don't agree with that ideology, this was the perfect opportunity for Mayor Eric Adams to put his foot down and support the police department and say they're doing exactly what they're supposed to do, and there's no racial profiling seen in this at all. But he can't do that. He's inadequate. He's inept. And again, we don't know exactly what his stance is.
I'm just going to put a small clip. Like, it's a great interview. You guys got to listen to it, honestly. Because, and again, I think that she's completely unprofessional and off base. But I just find it terrible that the mayor of the largest city in the world, that's in charge of the biggest police department in the world, cannot hang in the room with this. This is absolutely ridiculous. So here's just a clip of this.
The Federal Monitor was tasked with ensuring that NYPD is following the law, conducted an analysis that happened 8 years ago, but they're still here monitoring okay. What you're doing. And they said that you have brought back stop and frisk policies that are worse than they saw even during the Bloomberg era. But more importantly, they analyzed the neighborhood safe. I can show you the report is available. And I know it's been available to you because your spokesperson has commented on it. They did an analysis of over 10 precincts, 10 different precincts. That is factual. There's a Federal Monitor reporting to Judge T. Swain on it and presenting the information. They said that, yes, listen, let me finish so you can peel it back. They conducted an analysis of 10 different precincts, mm-hmm. and of the stops of 10 different precincts, they found that 97% of them, by the way, of the neighborhood safety teams that were disbanded in 2020 because of the disproportionate abuse against Black and Hispanic people that you revived, they analyzed 10 of those different neighborhood safety teams and found that they're conducting 97% of their stops on Black and brown people, and a quarter of them are unconstitutional. That's what the Federal Monitor said, not me.
Yeah, and that's the same.
And like, if you watch the interview, his response is ridiculous. But you see him there say you're misinformation. She's 100% accurate. That is what the Federal Monitor said. Now, I don't agree that it's abuse of Black and brown people at all. That's her own spin on it. But the fact that he's trying to interrupt her is ridiculous, and he can't give her a proper answer before or after, or even when he does interrupt her, is ridiculous. Who was it? It wasn't me. It wasn't me that the Federal Monitor came in on. They should.
You know, again, that was a terrible debate on his behalf because she was absolutely wrong. I mean, she's writing her numbers. Are these stops 90% Black, 97% Black and brown? Yes. But she's saying that during the height of stop, question, and frisk that I'm sorry, disregard what I said about that. She said the neighborhood safety teams, what she meant was anti-crime teams. Obviously, she forgot the name of it, that the anti-crime teams were stopping people disproportionately at a high rate. That were Black and brown, which is another complete falsity. So he did not combat that. It would have been a great opportunity to say, yes, 97% are stopped Black and brown. 94% of the homicide rates are based Black and brown. We're following the crime, so that's where our stops are going to be. And he should have said, that's great. What are the 10 precincts that you pulled? I highly doubt in those 10 precincts that you pulled up precincts that are demographically white. She probably pulled up precincts that are demographically Black and brown, and it would correlate to these stops, and it would correlate to the Black and brown community, which would correlate to crime. But he didn't do that because he's inadequate and inept, and he didn't have the vast knowledge to actually combat that question. And it was a simple, simple response.
Yeah, so I'm sorry I don't have all these clips in order, but I'm just going to put one more clip of him, and then we'll just talk the rest of the time. But here's one more clip of him talking. I don't even know what he's talking about, but this is the same interview. I don't know what this is. This isn't even from her. This is just from somebody else. Let me pull it up. Here we go.
Eric, we will take the migrants and asylum seekers if they just allow them to work. We're not going to take them and just have them sit around every day. If they're allowed to work, we would take them.
I agree with the national government.
She agrees with you.
I agree with you that migrants should be. She agrees with a lot of stuff.
Trust me, I trust you that I do not believe she's on that train.
I'm sitting here, Mayor Adams.
She's going to be dialing 911.
First of all, I ride the subway every day. I've worked as a public defender in this city and represented thousands of people. So please spare me. No, I am not.
You think more police make people feel safe, especially black and brown people?
No, they don't.
No, black and brown people?
Yes, brother.
Oh, my God.
I just had a town hall yesterday. All these black and brown folks inside that town hall. Number one issue they came up with, we want to feel safer. We want more cops on our corners.
People want to feel safer. It doesn't mean they want more cops. And if they did, New York City has the most police in the country. We have the largest police department in the country. How many more police do you want, Mayor Adams?
You go do an analysis.
What do you think?
First of all, she's completely disrespectful, but that's a great opportunity for him to even expose how disrespectful she is even more. If I was him, I would have taken a step back, taken a breather, and not try to interrupt her. Let her speak. Let her expose herself on how what she's saying is just completely anecdotal, and it's not based on factual data. Yes, New York City Police Department is the largest police department in the country, but it's in comparison to population. It's a city of 8 million people. The Los Angeles Police Department is the second largest police department because it's the second largest city. So the size of the police department is always in correlation with population. So that was an idiotic response, but that's where he needs to sit back and listen to the questions. As far as do people feel safer when they see police or not, I think that is a personal opinion. I think that's completely subjective. But what he could say is the reason why we have to put more police presence, because we don't have the opportunity to do as much intrusive police work based on the legislation that's been enacted.
I think she was very disrespectful, and I think that he was trying to talk over her, and I would have just said, "You're going to let me talk? If you're not going to let me talk, let me know. I'll leave." You know, I think like he couldn't handle the conversation. But the other thing was very disrespectful on his part. If you looked at the clip, for those of you that aren't there, he's not looking at her. He's talking to the guy, but he's directing his comments at her, but he refuses to look at her. So I think it was very disrespectful. And I think he was very intimidated by her because he knew there were things that he can't answer, that he doesn't know, that he doesn't have the data on. And like you said, she was making... People don't feel safer. How the hell do you know what people feel like? I don't feel safer. Like, what are you saying overall? I think overall, the majority of people, common sense people, feel safer when they see the cops. I mean, I think when people, you feel safe at 3 o'clock in the morning and there's two cops in the subway station as opposed to if you don't. I mean, and I think that's the majority, everybody. Is it everybody? No, but I would say it's the overwhelming majority. But she's talking for everyone. No, they don't. Really? You know, and again, she's probably some transplant. She probably moved to New York City in her 20s because she wanted to be urban. And now, you know, she has this whole anti-police agenda. And honestly, I think that, like, it just shows how incompetent he is, that he can't even handle the conversation with this girl. It's really, I could tell why he made no arrests. I mean, God forbid he was put on the stand. I mean, he would perjure himself in an instant. He would go right to jail.
Absolutely. I think that also shows the part of how inadequate he was. I agree with you. He wasn't making eye contact with her because he knew that his responses they're not genuine and they don't come from a place of knowledge. And I think that, it looked ridiculous, the fact that she was able to control the conversation. You're the mayor of New York City. You're the mayor of a city of 8 million people, and you can't control this conversation with this young lady that doesn't have the vast amount of knowledge that you should have and the data that you could have from the New York City Police Department that you could get in the snap of the fingers. It's absolutely ridiculous. Again, I think it's completely subjective what she's saying. I agree with you. I think that I personally would feel more comfortable going to the subway at 3 a.m. seeing a police officer. She may not. That's her opinion. I think that's subjective. But overall, the New York City Police Department does their job based on crime. This ideology, I think they completely debunk themselves when they give these numbers and say that 97% are black and brown stopped? Yes. Who's committing the crime? I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. You see the correlation from, you know, from population to the actual crime statistics themselves. So is there a margin of error? Yes, there's always going to be a margin of error. But I'd rather have that margin of error than a lawless society that we see now.
So before we get off, I just want to talk about politicizing the death of, the murder of Jonathan Diller. You know, I went on Newsmax. I made a lot of statements, a lot of very political statements. I really, when I got the call to ask to come on, I contemplated doing it because I was like, I don't want to politicize his murder. I don't want to, but at the same time, I'm like, things need to be said, and there's never going to really be a good time to say it. So it might as well say it while it's in the news, right? How I feel. Is it how every law enforcement officer feels across the country? No, but that's how I feel. And I'm like, if I'm given the opportunity, I might as well do it. So, but everyone's saying, oh, we don't want to politicize it. We don't want to politicize. How'd you feel about the Diller family turning away Governor Kathy Hochul?
I was extremely proud of this family. We've heard it time and time before. Most cops, I remember when I was employed by New York City Police Department, especially during the Blasio era, they said that God forbid something that would happen to them, they wouldn't want Mayor Bill de Blasio at their funeral. But this family actually did it. They actually put their feet down and said that the people that are responsible for the legislation that has caused a lawless society, that gave an opportunity for a creep of life to take the life of their son, they actually took a stand. So I'm extremely proud of that family. I stand behind them. I completely support them. I think that they took a bold stance. And again, like I said, I hate the fact that the murder of this young police officer, a fellow brother, has to be politicized. But unfortunately, these things have to be said. And I'm extremely proud of you, John, that you took the opportunity to go on Newsmax and actually speak on behalf of the murder of Jonathan Diller. You're a representative of us all, and you made us extremely proud. I know I am. Thank you.
I think everything's political, right? I think that because of politics, Jonathan was murdered. He had the ability to get murdered. Could a police officer get killed any day? Yes. But he wouldn't have got killed by those two individuals if not for politics. And I believe when those terms are used, it's really to shut us up. Don't politicize this. Now's not the time. It's like, and I always think like now is the time, you know. But I'm not gonna lie. I didn't want to do it. I felt obligated to do it because I said, I have a lot of opinions about a lot of things, and I speak vocally about a lot of things. And now I'm getting the opportunity to go out and do it on national TV. I'd be a complete coward, and I would be against everything I did if I didn't speak my truth. And unfortunately, my truth is going to be political because I believe politics affects all of our lives. You know, and I watched the funeral today. I listened to the wife speak. It's heart wrenching. It was horrible. Honestly, it was horrible to sit through. It was horrible to listen. I can't imagine what she feels. I don't even know how she stood up there and did it. And and again, I'm like, you know what? This is how we honor people. This is how we honor them in death. We should honor them the same way in life. And we should honor the work that these people do in life. And we need to tell the truth in order to do that.
I agree. We've seen such extreme bravery from the wives of fallen police officers, you know, and I say it's no surprise that these are the women that have fell in love with police officers. You know, it makes sense. And these women have shown extreme amount of resilience and bravery. And what Jonathan Diller's wife said was so impressive. You know, she said that Detective Rivera's wife spoke about how we need change, how her husband was murdered, and these politicians have the blood on their hands, and they need to, and the time has to come for change. And now with the death and the murder of Jonathan Diller, this police officer, his wife said that change never came. And she was absolutely right. I mean, again, I want to thank these the wives of these fallen police officers for showing such bravery and such strength. It's amazing to watch. And, we all feel her pain. This is a fallen brother, but the pain that she has to go through and her one-year-old son, it's just it's a pain they'll have forever. And again, I'm so proud of that family, the way they stood up in memory of Jonathan Diller. I mean, I'm sure he must be extremely proud. And with that, I say God bless and Godspeed.
Just one more topic on it. First of all, big shout out to Dave Portnoy, right? I ordered a few of those shirts. Great shirt, great cause. I think he already raised $1.5 million as of early this morning. So, you know, if you guys want, I'll put the link in there too, Barstool Sports. They got a shirt. All of the proceeds are going to go to the family. When I bought it, he was actually fundraising and he was matching it. So I think he raised $750,000 at that time, and then he matched $750,000. But now, obviously, as the days goes on, it's still growing. So I mean, I think that's a great, it's a beautiful shirt. I think it's for a great cause. This woman is going to need support. The last thing she needs to do is worry about money while she's raising her children. You know, I don't think it'll hurt to take a couple of dollars out of your pocket to buy a t-shirt. So I big shout out to Dave Portnoy. But also a big shout out to Donald Trump for picking up the phone. I mean, Donald Trump's a very polarizing figure, right? He doesn't know which way the family leans. And it's very big on him to pick up the phone and just to offer his condolences and say that he wanted to come to the wake. And they said they would love to have him, and he went. But it's a stark contrast to what happened with the President Joe Biden. Eric, what do you have to say to President Joe Biden?
Well, it's the same thing that you're saying, that everyone's saying, right? Just say his name. Honor a fallen police officer that represents American society. You're the president of America. He represents the soldiers, the men that keep this country safe domestically and internationally. We have soldiers abroad and we have soldiers within. And our police officers are soldiers within. So say his name. Honor the police officer. But the fact that he's not said his name or actually made attempt to go to the wake or memorialize the murder of Jonathan Diller or any other police officer right now in throughout the country that has lost their lives in the line of duty just shows the stance that they have in their position. And the fact that they're willing to keep this this anti-police rhetoric is just absolutely disgusting, despicable. And we cannot allow this. You know, so that's one thing I'll say about John Schell. He's right. Your vote counts. So we need to vote to change. We need people that support police officers, because police officers are a fabric of society. And I really mean that when I say that. When you tear down a police officer, you're tearing down your own country. So I think people really need to think about that. And again, I honor police officer Jonathan Diller, and I have the utmost disdain for President Joe Biden and the entire staff right now. You know, again, am I on the left side of politics? Absolutely not. I believe in what's American. This is completely un-American.
So we got a couple of conflicted souls in the appointed management. I like to refer to them as the token pale faces, Michael Kemper and John Schell. I personally believe them to be conservatives. I believe them to be supporters of Donald Trump. But yet they work for the Biden of Brooklyn, who supports Joe Biden's reelection campaign, who supports open border policy. So it's almost like, so you have no stance either, right? You go home, you tell your neighbors one thing, you tell your friends other thing, you talk to conservative media heads, and you pretend you're aligned with them, but you're not. You're basically doing what Eric said. You're stabbing them in the back, putting the armor on, give them a kiss on the cheek. Like, that's what you're doing to New York City. That's what you're doing to the country. That's what you're doing to the men and women of the New York City Police Department. So, yes, is it terrible that we have to talk about these things? I guess, because the truth is terrible. But it needs to be said. Everything that we're saying needs to come out. It needs to be said. Again, you'll go debate that girl, but you won't come on this platform where we would never do what she did to you guys. But you would never come on here where we would give you the floor and never try to talk over you or anything. Just, again, shows the character of these individuals that are leading the New York City Police Department. It's absolutely, utterly disgusting. And I can't say enough about it, how they disgust me. And honestly, I did. We stayed off social media, not attacking them, out of respect for everybody else, out of respect for the Diller family. It had nothing to do with respect for them.
Yeah, and I will say that also, of course. You know, if Jonathan Diller was a fan of the podcast, or if his family, if they watch the podcast, please reach out to us at www.thefinestunfiltered.com. If there's any way we could help the family, you know, we don't have the funds right now that this podcast is building, but if there's any way we could help, absolutely, we'd be proud. And I say that because this is the only entity that we see so far that has supported active members while they're alive. We see all these different organizations, and we see the unions, and we see the New York City Police Department support and love police officers in death. But what about in life? And this has been the only entity to support police officers in their life. Let's support them and love them while they're living. So to that, that's what I want to say. New York's Finest Retirement Filter podcast, we support those that are actually serving right now, that are breathing the air, and we thank them every day. Honestly, we support the rank and file. And of course, you know, the murder of Jonathan Diller is a complete tragedy. And that's why we need to support, and we need to peel back the legislation that's been enacted by these leftist politicians that caused the murder of Jonathan Diller. Again, and, you know, I've heard it's been debated to me that even when in a time when police officers are being supported, so police officers still die in the line of duty. And that's absolutely correct. But what John said is absolutely right. It would not be to a cretin of life like this thug. This thug would be in jail.
One last thing before we get off. Donald Trump makes a speech. He flies to the wake. He's at the wake. He makes a speech. There's not one member of the New York City Police Department standing behind him. Now, it came to our attention that Tariq Shepard, the Deputy Commissioner of Public Information, gave a speech and said, "We're not effing going to be a part of this, and nobody better take a picture or shake his hand." Now, I just got to say right off the bat, you're at a wake. And if I was in charge at that wake, or and I was a high-ranking official, or even if I was a sergeant, I was just going there with my guys, I would say, listen, Donald Trump's going to be here. We're not going to be running up like little girls taking photos. This isn't photo hour. We're at a wake of a murdered police officer. Act like a professional. But I would never tell anyone to not shake anybody's hand. That is completely not a lawful order. It's completely political. It's completely politicizing the murder of this individual. And what did we see? No one stood behind him. And I think that was a slap in the face to the members of the New York City Police Department. I think it was a slap in the face to New York City residents. Because you know what? If Joe Biden showed up, they should be standing behind him. If Barack Obama showed up, they should be standing behind him. Show respect, regardless if you like him or not. He was the 45th president of the United States. I wasn't a fan of Barack Obama, the 44th president of the United States. I would have damn stood behind him if he stood there in solidarity to come show respects to the family. That was absolutely disgusting, and that's another failure on the New York City Police Department.
All right, hands down, it's beautiful what you said. Absolutely true. I think that is completely despicable. The fact, if you align with Donald Trump or not, he was there supporting the murder of a police officer. So absolutely, I agree with you. Shouldn't be taking pictures. It's just not photo hour. I don't like when police officers take pictures at funerals and they're smiling together. I mean, this is an opportunity to memorialize the career of Jonathan Diller and to be there in support of his family right now. His family is hurting. They're going through pain. You have to be there for them. So you should absolutely stand behind Donald Trump. And shameful on any of the cops that actually listened to that unlawful order. But what's shameful about that also is Tariq Shepard was willing to stand in solidarity with Alvin Bragg and take photo ops with Alvin Bragg and support him on his Twitter page when he was former commanding officer. But now Donald Trump, who actually attends the wake of a murdered police officer, you have the audacity to tell the police officers not to stand behind him. And what's even more alarming, and really what I'm perturbed by, is the fact that the police officers actually listened to this. This was an opportunity to stand in strength and stand in moral principle and all stand together and say, you know what? Screw that. We're all going to stand behind him because he supports the New York City Police Department. And that's what we need right now. We need support, and we need support from high-profile people that actually care about us. Again, completely despicable. But, of course, he'll take a photo op with Alvin Bragg, who was in complete opposition to the New York City Police Department, who sought the indictment of Donald Trump. So it shows exactly where Tariq lines himself, because Tariq is not apolitical. He's progressive political. But, and again, it shows how politics has penetrated the police department. The NYPD is no longer apolitical. It's majority progressive. Why? Because the leaders of it are progressive.
And another thing, and it's got to be said because it disgusted me, and I really wanted to say something, and I refrained from saying stuff for 3 days. Kaz Daughtry's social media. I mean, he has a photographer following him around at the wake, at the funeral, and he's posting photos of himself. Come on, man. I mean, like, you can't do better than that. You can't. I get taking photos of the procession. I get taking photos of the vehicles coming down, of the motorcycles coming down, of all the different agencies. But why does it always have to be about you? Like, you don't see that, like, that's why nobody likes you, is because you, everything's about you. No, you're making it like it's your fan page. Like, people are following you. People aren't following you, dude. They're following the New York City Police Department. They want to see what it's saying, what it's doing. I mean, act like a professional. I mean, it's completely disgusting. It was heart wrenching to even watch, and it hurt me to not say anything because I was really like I was going through it because I was like I really should say something about this. But again, I didn't want to be disrespectful. I'm not going to go back and do it, but I'm saying it here because I know you listen to this show. Don't do that again. That was absolutely wrong. You look like an idiot. Everyone and their mother said this kid can't help himself. Everyone was sending that to me. This kid can't help himself. He looks like a moron. So picture after picture after picture of you. Nobody wants to see it.
This whole upper echelon is a bunch of idiotic imbeciles. I mean, let's go back to Chiefs on a Train. We did an entire podcast and episode about the Chiefs on a Train. Again, what do we say about that? We said that the upper management, the NYPD, they think they're some type of celebrities. They think they're entertainers. And it's become about them. It's not about public safety. It's not about the public. It's not about the people anymore. We're supposed to be public servants. You're supposed to be serving the people, but they're serving their own egos. They're serving their own careers. And Kaz Daughtry completely just does not have the mental capacity, the maturity level to be in such a high-level position. He doesn't. You know, I've heard from numerous sources that he failed several sergeant's exams. It's just a clear indication that he's just not prepared for this position. He's way in over his head. And the fact that he keeps doubling down on it and he never takes any advice, and we know that he watches this podcast, at some point, you need to humble yourself and actually sit back and evaluate what you're doing. Are you for the people or are you for yourself? Make the decision. Because it's not a good look when you're wearing that uniform. And if you're for yourself, you should retire completely from the police department and go out and do your own business. Because you make it clear that it's about Kaz Daughtry and not about the people of New York City.
And I can tell you right now, if you start your own podcast or you go out there on social media looking for follows, you're not going to have many, dude. You're not. The way you are, you're just not. Because people don't like phoniness. People don't like egos. And I'm telling you, your social media account, you're going to have to buy a lot more followers. You're going to have to pay for it out of your own money instead of the city funds. And no one's going to listen to your podcast other than to make fun of you. So, I mean, unless you change. I mean, listen, we're all human. We all make mistakes. We could all change. But what we see is you're completely egotistical. It's disgusting. A lot of cops called it out. A lot of people that aren't cops called it out. Everyone was asking. I basically ignored every message I've gotten over the last 3 days. I'm like, I'm not doing anything. We're not putting out any memes. We're going to be completely respectful. But all that changes tomorrow. So we're going to go right back to what we were doing, right back to seeking the truth. And our invitation to come on the podcast remains open. But you'll go try to schmooze over Oli Emmy and play nice with her instead of actually having a conversation and speaking to the men and women of the New York City Police Department instead of threatening.
Well, I just want to say that, you know, I listen, I'm in support of rank and file, and I'm absolutely not in support of this weak upper management. So I support right now these media personnel and even, even these people that get on social media, they're in opposition to the police department. I don't like what they're saying. I think it's completely wrong. But I think for the police department to go at them and harass them, it's completely unprofessional in the same manner that they harassed this podcast trying to suppress our First Amendment speech. New York City Police Department is supposed to support First Amendment speech. You're supposed to allow protest. But that's the same thing on social media. When these people are anti-police and when this podcast speaks out our opinion, that's First Amendment speech. The police department should remain apolitical and completely stay out of it and show professionalism by not taunting these people. You don't have to like what they're saying. We don't like what they're saying, but they still have an opportunity to say it. And if you want to debunk it, then have a professional debate about it. Do it in a professional forum. Let them speak. Let that opposition meet opportunity. But these people are completely egotistical. It looks so bad. It looks so unprofessional. If there's anything I'd like to say at this point, if John and I ever had an opportunity to be police commissioners or first deputy commissioners or high-ranking officials of the New York City Police Department, we would stop their social media accounts immediately. That's the first thing that has to happen. They have to stop immediately. It's such a bad look for the police department. They really are. Honestly, you ask me, it's really distorting the patch. And the patch is representative of the New York City Police Department. And they're just completely distorting the good name of the New York City Police Department.
I agree. I think it's completely unprofessional. I think they look like children. I don't think they look representative of the New York City Police Department whatsoever. And I don't even think the account really represents themselves. Like I said, I don't think that John Schell is making those tweets. I just don't. I mean, I have no information that that's the case, but I just don't. I just don't see it. And I just think, again, he's being completely used and abused, and he's letting himself do it, which is why I have no respect for him. And to all the organizations who pretend to be out there to support cops, why don't we try to support them in life as well, not just death? Why don't we try to support them, do things for cops when they're alive, right? Why don't we try to do those things too? You know, I gotta be honest. It's another thing that really weighs on me. It weighs on my soul. It weighs on my heart when I see people posting photos at a funeral of themselves. It really bothers me. It really, really, I would never do that. Never, never, never. I'm not saying that if you didn't run into someone you hadn't seen in a while and you guys are off to the side and like, oh, I'm sending this to your brother or it's your cousin. I'm going to send this to grandma that we got to see each other or someone you went to the academy. I'm not saying that you can't do that. There's a time and place for everything. It's definitely not at a wake. But when you're doing it to self-promote, I mean, it's absolutely disgusting. Honestly, it's like helping the old lady cross the street and having somebody follow you and film you and then put a nice little song to it and put it on your social media, show what a great person you are. It's absolutely ridiculous. I'm sick of seeing it. I mean, I know it'll continue because the world is just filled with phony people, but I see you, the cops see you, the public sees you, you know, so we all see you.
Yeah. And I just want to leave with this. You know, we have to honor Jonathan Diller. The murder of him is just so horrific. It's basically an execution. So I say to the police officers that are out there day in and day out, please always be careful, be mindful of your tactics. Unfortunately, you're in an environment right now that's completely lawless, and there are so many firearms out there right now. You know, you're being told so many firearms are being apprehended and how great it is, but it's not a celebration. For every firearm that's apprehended, there are so many firearms out there that have not been retrieved. Be careful out there. Interact with everyone out there as if they may have a potential illegal firearm out there. Please, my heart goes out to you men and women that are still out there. You put your lives on the line every day. You have the ultimate blessing. I have nothing but honor and respect for the men and women that are still out there with their boots on the ground. You know, we really do support you. Are we critical sometimes of TikTok things and some things that are out there? Yes. But overall, we're extremely proud of you. And, you know, to still do the job during this time. God bless you. Like I said, my hat's off to you. I thank you all.
Absolutely. I think that's it, man. You know, be safe out there. You know, definitely, you know, the game doesn't change. It's the same as it ever was. You guys are targets. Your targets for life, your targets for legally, your target for absolutely anything and everything you do. And you're going to be criticized 8 ways to Sunday by people that are way more critical than me and Eric, people that are actually looking to fire you, throw you in jail, and some people who even want to kill you. So, you know, continue to do it. Do what you guys got to do. Work out, eat right, sleep, support each other. Support guys that even that you see going through it, get to know one another, build bonds. I mean, it's a great, it's still a great job. It really is. I still miss it. I miss going to work every day. I do. I miss it. As much as retirement's great, I miss it. Do I miss the politics and the bull crap behind it? No, not at all. But I miss the camaraderie. I miss the men and women. I miss the jokes. I miss even being away during this time. It was very hard. I know for myself and for Eric, for Sal, for all of us in retirement, really, for everybody, for all the retired. I mean, I spoke to so many retired guys these past couple of days. It's not even funny. And literally everyone that I spoke to was under the same thing. They just, so it's hard. It's hard to be away. It's definitely, I don't even want to say it's a brotherhood because there's a ton of women, but it is a brotherhood. It is.
No, I agree with you. Listen, you know, it's the same thing. When I was in the Marine Corps, for the first couple of years, I would always get the itch, like, oh, I want to go back. You know, I want to go back. And things happen, especially at the height of Operation Iraqi Freedom, when things were still going on. You know, I'd always get that itch. I always felt like, you know, I wanted to be out there for my brothers. And I still feel that till today, so many years later. But now, especially being retired from the New York City Police Department, it's been less than 2 years. And, I mean, this was the time I really had the itch, like, wow, I kind of wish I was back there. Unfortunately, during the murder of Jonathan Diller and hearing those radio transmissions, and I wish I could be there to help. I mean, I could just feel the pain. I mean, thank God I never had anyone die in my arms, but just hearing that partner on the radio and just feeling that feeling of, like, of helplessness, like, you know, it just, every second counts and every second takes forever. We all been there. It's just a horrible feeling. And man, like I said, I'm so proud of the men and women that are still on the ground, and the cops that I still talk to, that I've had the opportunity to train, and they're moving on with their careers. You know, I've obviously passed the torch, and some of them are lieutenants themselves now. And they tell me how they operate out there, and it's kind of passed on a lot of the ideology I have, and they implemented their own. It's just fascinating to hear. And again, I'm extremely happy to be on this path, but that was the moment that I had the itch to be back. But again, it was the greatest job in the world. I don't think it is now. I think it will be back to it at some point. But what I can say, it is some of the greatest men and women on earth. Absolutely. Donald Trump said that. That I have to agree with. Any man or woman that puts on a uniform overseas or in this country, God bless you. You deserve the utmost respect. And for that, I salute you. Seriously. Thank you, everyone. I appreciate it. New York's Finest Retired Unfiltered Podcast, your 265 Police Live Series. John, you got anything to cut it out?
That's it. We'll be back at you.
Law enforcement professionals dedicate their lives to serving and protecting our community. But who's protecting their financial futures? That's where Laidlaw Blue comes in. Our wealth management platform is specifically designed for the law enforcement community. Laidlaw Blue is a division within Laidlaw Wealth Management, run by retired New York City detective John McDermott. His status as a retired detective uniquely positions him to establish a deep connection between Laidlaw Blue and the law enforcement community. Our platform is easy to use and provides a range of financial services, including investment management, retirement planning, and insurance solutions. With Laidlaw Blue, you can secure your financial future and provide for your loved ones. Our team of experienced financial advisors understands the unique challenges and opportunities that law enforcement professionals face. We're here to help you navigate the complexities of financial planning and achieve your goals. Laidlaw Blue, secure your financial future today. Book a meeting using the QR code displayed or call us directly on 888-901-BLUE. That's 888-901-BLUE.